Okay, so we have a tremendous chus to be able to start considering the sugya of Heseba. First should mention for the Bali Diktuk, we're not going to address the question of whether the word should really be pronounced Heseba or in some other way. We will suffice with the yeshivish pronunciation for now. So we are going to use that term, whether or not it is grammatically correct. But we all know what we're referring to here. And we're familiar with it as a practice from our lifetimes, from our experience with Starim throughout the years. But as we said, this coming Pesach, God willing, we are all expecting to have a Seder, no other, that we understand much more deeply and much more profoundly than we ever have before. So what's it been about all these years, this leaning, this Heseba? And if you got to see the Gemara on Daf Kovches, which jumped off of that one line in the Mishnah that we started with on Daf Tzaditas, the Gemara on Kovches has a number of foundational principles and details as well, all there contained within that one Amud. So, presumably you've seen that. So, with that background and with what you know, let's try to lay out a plan. So, if we want to try to understand this concept as thoroughly as possible, what kind of questions do you think are on your mind? What do we want to try to figure out? Coming as an investigative journalist on this topic, what is it that you would want to try to understand? What would you think is up there for us to try to figure out about this topic? Ari?
And it says that in the mission that you shouldn't eat until you recline. So what if someone ate but without reclining? Is this reclining not good or not?
Okay, that's a very important question, clearly. Right? So the issue of how crucial is Heseba to the various mitzvos is very much an issue that the Rishonim are going to deal with. Very much an issue for the poskim, and very much practically relevant. Right? This is something that comes up every year, presumably for all of us, because we're not used to this. So it's quite common that one or more of the steps of the Seder, one or more of us, will probably forget to do Heseba for a part of it, whether it's with the Dalekosos or Matzah, wherever it is. The possibility that we'll forget without even coming on to, let's say, somebody who just can't for whatever medical reason or whatever other factors might be involved, but just the likelihood that you're going to forget at some point to do Heseba for one of the places where you're otherwise supposed to, it's highly, highly likely. So we're dealing with a very relevant practical question, and certainly that's definitely something we need to address. But Ari, let me push you further. So in addition to the importance of that question, is there a question beyond that, behind that question? Is that question premised on anything else, would you think? Can you make that question even more foundational, as important as it is in practice? Do you think it exists by itself, or does it reflect anything else? Ari?
Perhaps an understanding of why we recline in the first place and the nature of his obligation to Reiser or Rabbanan might lend itself to that discussion, and how it works with the symbolism of the night as a whole.
Okay, those are all great points. That's not even what I was looking for yet, but that's all relevant also, for sure, and those are definitely other things we need to figure out. But you're right that we could even use this one question as a point of entry into so many other issues. You could almost use this as a heading for a discussion about most of the questions in Heseba. If I just started off with that question, is Heseba ma'akev or not, it probably requires me to define almost every other issue. So certainly you're right that the question of Dereis v'Derabanan often plays a huge role in a question like that for a lot of reasons. Right? If I want to know if something is ma'akev, so the issue of whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan is usually very important, because just general power reasons that d'oraisas are generally taken more severely than d'rabbanan, so that impact is usually different. We've seen throughout that Dinim Darabanan tend to function in a different way, and therefore, for that reason, it could impact whether something is ma'akiv or not. I think we've mentioned relatively recently when talking about the concept of Hidr Mitzvah and its impact on our Mishnah, we mentioned that there are a number of Rishonim who work off the premise that every din daraisa is ma'akev, and that if a din is not ma'akev, it's an indication that it's not minat Torah, so also justifies that correlation. And also, if a din is drabanan, so, and if it's addressing a mitzvah minat Torah, so by the very definition, it'll mean that there was a time when both parts were not there together. And that also makes it harder to imagine that the din is ma'akev, at least in a fundamental way. Because if we're talking about a din darabanan, then we mean that the din darais existed without it for some period of time. So that's four reasons, perhaps, why the correlation between darais and darabanan and ma'akev or not is very likely to be an important one. So yes, that's also very much an issue. What it symbolizes, I think we're going to have to see more. That's definitely something that we want to know about in this issue. How that ties into the question of whether it's ma'akev or not, I think I'm going to need a little more. I don't know if we want to try to put that on the shelf for now, come back to it later. But that doesn't as obviously link to the question of whether it's ma'akev or not. But I think there's still another question that you could ask that is going to affect that question. And let's still try to explore for that. So what else? What else, whether you're looking for the foundation of Ari's question or other questions about Haseba, what else might you put on the table? Yeah, Ellie? Okay, that's a very important question, right? That's a great question. So we do have a sense that Haseba represents something, right? What's the one word that is brought up with the Haseba constantly? Chayrus, freedom, right? So we certainly have many indications from the Gemara, from the Rishonim, from elsewhere, that Haseba is about Chayrus. So that is a great question to ask. Does it have any inherent significance, Haseba specifically? Or are we working off a premise that Haseba displays Chayrus? But that could branch off into two different directions, right? What practical nafkamina would it be if you would just say that Haseba is not inherently valuable, but it is the best simon we have of Chayrus right now? So can you tell me at least two nafkaminas of that possible formulation? Yeah, Ari? Or is that into...
Maybe if you found something that was better emblematic of the expression of freedom, would you replace it because it's not as good? Or you say, no, it's inherently significant, so it can't be replaced.
Okay, I think actually maybe combine the two into one with that formulation. So basically, I would have broken that down into two parts. But I would say that the first part, is there a value in other things that make this message even outside from Haseba? And do we find that? Do we find that there's this general Chayrus mission and Haseba is just one example of that? And other things maybe should also be brought in. And the other half of your question, we can break it off into a separate question. And it's something that we'll see was discussed explicitly by Rishonim, is what if Haseba does not represent Chayrus, either for cultural reasons? Right? Do we live in an era right now where that's just not what people associate with Haseba? Or for whatever individual reasons might be going on, or whatever specifics are relevant to any individual, if the Haseba Cheres equation is weakened, so what would that mean for us practically? Okay. Any other questions or thoughts? Any other issues we're going to want to keep in mind?
Which direction you lean?
Okay, so that's an important detail question, although the Gemara does address that. That's one of the details we're going to want to know. And why it's one way or another, and how would that play out? It sounds like such a political question, as much as everyone's ears are always perked for any kind of political discussion. So yeah, which direction do you lean? So remember already last year, people circulating a picture of Ben Shapiro with the caption that in Pesach I actually lean to the left. But so the political implications of those questions are certainly what gets in the way. But the details of why leaning, we know that the Gemara does tell us that Haseba is small, but the question of why does that have to be the case and are there reasons to distinguish is an important detail that we're going to have to look into also. But I think one question, just what I was looking for before a little bit, as far as Ari's point, and again, the question of what's ma'ake, what's not, is clearly a huge issue. And the issue of whether it's d'raisa or d'rabanan is probably strongly correlated to it also. But you could make the question even more fundamental, that if I were to say, for example, that Haseba is ma'akev matzah, or that Haseba is ma'akev the Dalet Kosos, what does it sound like I'm saying about the relationship of those concepts of matzah and Haseba, or matzah and Dalet Kosos? It would sound like I'm saying that this becomes a detail of the mitzvah. So the question of how to relate to Haseba, is it essentially a aspect of the various mitzvos of Pesach night? That they have a condition within them, a tenai, that they should be done derech Haseba? Or is it its own value? That we have an ideal and a requirement of Haseba on Pesach night. And there are certain contexts where it makes sense to do that and certain contexts where it doesn't. But it's its own obligation of Haseba. So if we were to say the second way, that Haseba is its own concept, it wouldn't seem to make sense to say that it's Ma'akev Matzah or Dalet Kosos. Right, that if I ate matzah or I had the kosos without Haseba, so it would seem like the mitzvah should be fine. I failed to fulfill the mandate of Haseba, but why should that impact my matzah? Why should that impact my dalet kosos? So the possibility of it being ma'akev goes to a very fundamental question of what is Haseba. Is Haseba its own obligation? That we're told that this is something we need to fit into our schedule Pesach night? Or is it not its own thing? It's a detail in the mitzvah of matzah, a detail in the mitzvah of dalet kosos, a detail in whichever mitzvah is partnered with it. Now, a part of what we'll also have to explore, probably in its own way, is, like we mentioned a little bit yesterday, that the Dalet Kosos seem to have a special relationship with Haseba. And it's both more complicated in a way, as we saw if you looked at the Gemara, where the Gemara is not sure, but the first two, the second two, and the Rav Nachman, there's a lot to explore about that whole formulation. So there's a somewhat complicated relationship between Haseba and the Dalet Kosos, but they do seem to have a lot that connects them. So considering specifically those two dinim together, Haseba and the Dalakosos is probably going to be particularly relevant to understanding that. Okay. Any other questions that might come to mind? Anything else we'd want to know when trying to consider this? Well, I'll give you two to keep at the forefront. So, one is a technical detail question, but it plugs into everything else. And the other is more of a general theoretical question, which will have ramifications. The first is just what dinim of the Seder night does it apply to? So the Gemara takes that question up to a certain degree on our daf, but leaves us with some question marks. Are there aspects of the Seder that Davka should not have Haseba? Do we have three categories, mitzvahs that require Haseba, mitzvahs that should not have Haseba, and mitzvahs that are optional? So that's something that certainly is an issue in the Rishonim and the Poskim, and also probably tells us something about the relevant concepts. So that's for sure something we need to understand. And there's a question I think I actually mentioned it a little bit yesterday, but I think is also very fundamental to the whole Haseba din. And this is something for sure we want to try to see what the details tell us and what direction it pushes us in. But it goes to this whole idea of Haseba displaying Cheres and how it's supposed to do that. Does anyone catch on yet to what I'm trying to figure out? So I'll give you a hint. Because one of the Makoros that you saw today was early on the list, very early on the list, I assume you saw it, is the Rambam. And it's a very, very often quoted line in the Rambam. You've probably heard this Rambam pointed out throughout your education when it comes to Pesach. Because it's a one-letter deviation, which might be very significant, from the text of the Haggadah. The Haggadah has things one way, and the Rambam here in the parts that you saw has such a slight difference in language, but it might be very significant for us. And it might give us grounds to also pose a real significant investigation into Haseba and probably Dalakosos also, and other dinim. So anyone have any idea what I'm getting at? So the letter that's added is the letter He. Right, so that the language, the Rambam, of Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayiv Adam, what? Right, so in every generation, right, so I have here the Shapsi Frankel in front of me. B'chol dor v'dor chayev adam leharos es atzmo ki'ilu hu ba'atzmo yotzo atam yishubim mitzrayim. Right, so, yes, and thank you, Ari, for putting that up. So, what's the language that we have in the Haggadah? Right, you notice a difference? Very often pointed out, the language in the Haggadah is B'chol dor v'dor Chayev Adam Liros es atzmo. So what's the difference between the two? It's a difference which could have all kinds of practical implications. Right, Liros es atzmo would mean that you should see yourself in that position. Right, that Pesach night It is your job, mentally, psychologically, to go back in time and to see yourself as living in that moment. While the Rambam, by adding this letter, it's not necessarily about how you are feeling, but it's about a display. Laharos es atzmo, that you have to make yourself look a certain way. So that could be a significant difference. Because that could also define this, all within those words, which again, the Rambam is quoted very often. This leads right into the Din of Haseba. And it's significant to read the two dinim together, right? So, thank you, Vav and Zion. So, if you could put up, or if you could put Zion up also. And so, b'chol dor v'dor, chayiv adam laharos es atzmo, ki'ilu hu ba'atzmo yotza at b'shuv mitzrayim, sh'nem v'yosanu esu misham, v'al dover zeh tziva karish baruch hu b'toru, v'zachar teki evad ha'yisa, klomar ki'ilu ata ba'atzmo chayisa evad, v'yotzasu l'cheres v'niftes. Lefikach, next halacha, right? Lefikach, kishu soir adam b'layla hazad, tzarech l'achol v'lishtos, v'hu mesiv derech cheres. So Vav leads right into Zion. This obligation of Haseba is a function of what he wrote in Halacha Vav. So the question of, is Haseba for the purpose of trying to instill some kind of feeling within us? Is this method acting, basically? I don't know if you're familiar with what method acting is. It means that if you have an actor who is trying to really get into his character, so he tries to draw on an emotion that parallels. If he's supposed to be sad about something, so he tries to conjure up a sad memory so that he will actually be sad when he is displaying himself as sadness. So is the idea that we are trying to put on a show here, because it's a Pirsumei Nisa, and therefore we want to... Are we looking for ourselves to draw into the experience, or are we looking to just display the experience? It's not about how we feel, necessarily. Now that, I think, is something that we will see coming up again and again in this sugya, because the question of, are we looking to paint a picture for others, or are we looking to instill a feeling within ourselves, is a open issue here. And maybe it's a little bit of both. Very possible that it is somewhat of both. So the Rambam's formulation is going to be significant. And there are those, for example, just to give you one case of where this could make a difference. So to go back to our Mishnah, if you saw the Tosfos on our Mishnah, and we're also assuming that the fact that these dinim are introduced to us in certain contexts and within certain scenarios, so the Dalet Kosos was taught to us in the Mishnah through the obligations of the Ani, and Haseba was also right before that. So even the Ani has to do Haseba. So Tosfos on the Mishnah and Sadi Tes asks, of course, you know, why should he be putter from this? Now, what's the Mishnah telling us? That, oh, the Ani also should do Haseba. Right, if you think about it, that's more of a pshita than the next din. Right? So yesterday we talked a little bit about how the Gemara later asks that it seems pashut that the Ani should have to go around and acquire funds in order to get Dalet Kosos, and we tried to figure out why is it pashut. It's not so pashut, it would seem. And it certainly would seem like it's a big chiddush. Okay, a person who can't afford, it's a significant expense, 4 cups of wine. Especially if you're buying for the family, that's a chiddush. But Haseba, it doesn't cost anything. Right, so why should there be a need to tell you that even the Ani has to do Haseva. So Tosfos, and the Tosfos that the Mordechai has, put that on the list, but look at the Mordechai as Tosfos in a little bit more detail, says it a little bit more, that the Chiddush is that even though he doesn't have anything to lean on, he doesn't have any pillows or cushions, so still he has to do Haseva. So what's the Tosfos then coming to tell us? It sounds like what Tosfos is saying is that Haseba is not necessarily going to be an equal kind of experience for everybody. Now, we look at this through the prism of our modern eyes, where I think the whole idea of Haseba seems so foreign. It's just not the way anybody is used to eating at all nowadays. But you can imagine, okay, once upon a time, if there were people who liked to eat this way, so fine, but it presumably requires some kind of a comfortable setting in which to do it. So if somebody doesn't have that setting, and it's not going to be comfortable, is it the same? Right. This also goes to the question we said before about, is the Seba a din in itself, or is it a means to an end of some kind? Yes, is that a hand up? Is that the thrust of the Mishnah, though? The thrust of the Mishnah is to say that he has to. Lo yochal ad
sheyesu. Yeah, but I'm saying we don't say that.
You right.
You think that, you know, maybe this poor person can go in and find the chair or the couch to lay on.
Would that read with the Mishnah? So is that how the words come across? So if I would have thought that my opening premise was that everybody has to do Haseba, but he's, if you don't, you have to have cushions, and if you don't have cushions, you have to get them. And the Mishnah comes and says, and all we know is the line of the Mishnah that don't pass up on Haseba no matter what. Would that come across as a heter not to get cushions? It's a little bit of a harder read in the Mishnah. Seem.
You might think you had a heter and then it's telling you you don't.
Okay, so then, right, so then that, if you say it like that, so what Tosfos is saying is you might think that you have a heter, or maybe that it just doesn't make sense, right, to do Haseba in a way that's not going to be comfortable for you. Right, setting aside the question, which Rishonim talk about, we'll get to later, about whether it's no longer comfortable for anybody. But let's assume that it's comfortable for some people, and that that's the premise, that the default is, for most people it's comfortable, but for somebody who doesn't have the cushion, it's not comfortable. So you could have thought that it just doesn't make sense, that there's no point in doing it then. So the fact that, according to Tosfos, the thrust of the Mishnah is that it still does, so it could be, and this is how some read the Tosfos, that that is highlighting that it's not about how you feel, or it's not exclusively about how you feel. It's very possible there might be both components. But that there is a component there that applies even separate from whether it does anything to make you feel cheres. And that there's an aspect of displaying cheres, of displaying this position, even if it doesn't connect to anything that makes the individual himself internally feel it. So it's an interesting detail. Okay. So that question of Laharos versus Liros is just it's kind of a Kol HaGadol Kula question. It's a question about the whole mentality for the night, because this is so central to the experience of the Seder. But within Haseba specifically, especially because of the Rambam's direct connection from one to the next, after saying that statement, and then the next halacha starting Lefikach, Din of Haseba, so directly tying it into this, the question of Laharos or Liros, which could really be different things, is probably significant as well. Okay, so we laid out a few major things we want to try to figure out, and we still have a few minutes. So let's try to use the next few minutes to start that exploration. So one question which really we should start out with foundationally is, and it's among the aspects that Ari put into his question, is this a din d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, right? Because that will probably affect a lot of details and certainly frames our understanding of what's going on. So what would you say? Is it din d'oraisa? Is it d'rabbanan? Do you have any clues? And just to be fair, I should tell you there are clues I didn't necessarily give you to look at yet. So there are clues that you may not necessarily have seen. But from what you have seen or from what you can glean, what would you say? Is it din minat Torah? Does the Torah require this? Is it not minat Torah? What would you say? All right.
It seems to be the rabbinic requirement based off of the fact that it's currently absent in the Torah's recollection of what we have to do when eating matzah or in general. And also we see that there are...
All right, so let's keep track of what you're saying. So one clue is that I don't know so far that there is an explicit pasuk in Chumash that talks about Haseva. So from that basis, from that datum, it seems hard to say it's a din min ha-Torah. That's your first statement. Okay, go on.
Statement two is that there seems to be limitations or conditions which Haseva doesn't apply to, even though it's a din which currently exists. For example, the Gemara speaks about people who are in a state of like gira, like a Talmud etzel derav, would not engage in this practice. And it seems difficult to see that that would apply to a d'oraisa concept.
Okay, so let's explore that a little bit, because that's got a lot of substance to it also. So distinctions like that are relevant. First of all, like Ari says, it just doesn't sound like a d'oraisa, that to give an excuse or to allow dispensations for situations like that, it doesn't sound like the d'oraisa kind of system. And that's true, it doesn't. And there are those who even explicitly say that that's the logic behind it. So, for example, the Shiltas or Vachaygon, and I can give you this to look tomorrow, the Shiltas writes that the halacha of a Talmud by his Rebbe, that he doesn't do Haseba, is based on that kind of a clash, that the Yira for his Rebbe is a din min ha-Torah, and therefore, Haseba, which is Drabbanan, he says, like it's one of the clues you haven't seen yet, but like it's one of the clues that's out there, is not going to outweigh the din of Yira that he should have for his Rebbe, which is a din min ha-Torah. So, in addition to your correct point that it just doesn't seem like a din min ha-Torah in its application, but there are those who say it's the application is because of that, that because it gets outranked by other dinim, because it is a din d'rabbanan. Now, there's an interesting discussion to be had that we have to define it a little bit more in a fine-tuned kind of way, because it can't just mean that, okay, you have a conflict here, that, okay, the covered for your Rebbe requires you to not be Haseba, and on the other hand, you have the mitzvah of Haseba, so you have a clash. And because it gets difficult, for example, in the context of Kibbud Av V'Em. So we know that Kibbud Av V'Em, we're told, does not outweigh obligations, and even obligations midrabbanan. So you have a mitzvah midrabbanan, so one is supposed to perform that mitzvah midrabbanan, even if it's at odds with Kibbud Av V'Em. So we have to figure out exactly how that dynamic works, saying that this din is a function of that, and we'll have to explore that a little bit more, the idea that there are people, because of their Yira Kavod kind of relationship, are going to be excluded from Haseba. That's something that does need a little bit more definition, and God willing, we'll come back to that. But your point is very well taken, and in fact stated explicitly by some, that that's an indication that we're not dealing with a din min ha-Torah. So But let's take the question back a little bit. Okay, so that's, you know, that's basis to say it's Drabbanan. Is there any tzad to say it's Daraisa? So Ari started off saying that he doesn't see it as a pasuk. So does that leave us with any possibility? How could it be a Daraisa then? Is there any angle to consider it a Daraisa? Okay, that's actually very good. That's actually the answer I would have come to second. But you're right, that is a possible source. It's a more obscure source. So put that on the table for a second. We'll come right back to that because you're correct with that reference. But before coming on to that, one could have said, well, how do we read the Rambam? Right, so the Rambam we just looked at, and again, still up here in the chat. So maybe there's some room to say that he's telling us there's a din min haTorah, because what did he say? Behold, the Madara Chayva Maharis Asatzma, etc. Shenemar Ve'Alsanu Hotzi Misham. Right, Ve'Aldavar Zed Siva Kadosh Baruch Hu BaTorah V'Zacharto Ki Eved HaYisa. Right, etc. Lefikach. You have to eat Bedaracheris, you have to do Haseva. So maybe there's some platform there to say that the Rambam's language is telling us that the Torah says you have to remember what it was like to be a part of this process. And as a consequence of that pasuk in the Torah, we have an obligation to eat a certain way. And Haseva is a part of that. So maybe there's something to talk about that's a Daraisa, even though it doesn't have a direct reference to Haseba, but maybe what the Rambam is saying is that this is the way you have to do it in order to fulfill what the Psukim say, even though they didn't tell you that explicitly. So this is a point that was considered Rav Asher Weisslit in his Haggadah, Haggadah is a very popular Haggadah. I think it was also translated into English, if I'm not mistaken. Not sure about that. But certainly, the Hebrew version of his Haggadah has come out in a few versions. He has a discussion about this in the Haggadah about should we possibly consider that this is an example of the category of Maser HaKosuv L'Chachamim. Right, you might recall we spoke about this a little bit in the previous month. We talked about it, I think, already before Sukkot, because it was also its most prominent example of this category is Melechus Chalamoid. So it goes to the whole understanding of how Chalamoid works. The idea that's based on a Gemara in Maseches Chagiga and the Tosfos over there, and Daf Yud Ches, that there are certain dinim which are from the Torah and lo maser hakasuv elo lechachamim, that the Torah gave over the authority to the rabbis to determine the details, which is a fascinating sugya in itself, a lot to talk about what that means. But maybe that's what's happening here, he considers, that when it comes to Melechus Chalamoid, for example, that's the most prominent example, it sounds like, if you understand it this way, that the Torah said not to do malacha on Yantif, including Chol HaMoed. But Chol HaMoed has different details than Yantif or Shabbos because the rabbis were given the mission to determine how the details play out. Now, it happens to be, Ari, that this goes specifically to your point that some of the Rishonim, the Beis Yosef, prominently among them, understand the whole impact of that category to be that you could have a din min haTorah, but the details play out like a derabbanan. Exactly along the lines of what you were saying before, that to draw distinctions between a Talmud and Rabbo and a parent and whatever, and all those things that don't sound like a din min haTorah. So some understand that that's exactly what you have when you have this concept, that maybe you have a din min haTorah, and the rabbis are given the authority to figure out the rules. And as a consequence of that, they'll also play out like Didim D'Rabbanan. So from that perspective, maybe that's what's going on here. So the Torah tells us we have to eat in a way that displays the awareness of Liros Laharos. And the rabbis tell us that that's Haseba. That's what it means. So maybe there's room to say it's Masra Kasa L'Chachan. Ultimately, Rav Asher doesn't settle there because he says, he thinks as a general rule, we don't run to that kind of a category too often. It's an interesting discussion when you do and when you don't. Rav David Cohn has in one of his forum, he has a whole kuntras where he has a list of any time, anywhere in Rishonim and Achronim, this concept is invoked. So it's interesting to see how many times it comes up and how many times it means different things. But what Rav Ashwai says here is that he thinks that this idea really is utilized when you have something which clearly needs details and parameters, and yet the Torah does not give us the details. So then there are scenarios where there's a certain ideal and the rabbis are tasked with figuring out the details. But here, he says, it could be that you could have the pasuk stand on its own. That the idea that you should remember that you were an eved, the psukim that the Rambam quotes in Halacha Vav, it could be that you could satisfy that completely without Haseba. So it's not like there is an aspect that really requires definition, and that leaves us the room to say the rabbis were authorized to do it, and those definitions become like a Dimin HaTorah. You don't have to come on to that. So, and to, taken together with the indications that it might be the Rabbanan and the Rishonim who say like that, he doesn't think this really is an example of Masar HaKasav HaChacham. But that is something that is maybe a possibility. Now the other, less present possibility, is what Zach said. And it's actually a medrash, which I could give you to look at tomorrow. So Zach pointed out that the pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Bishalach, I gave you the pasuk to look at, but didn't explain to you what it was about. So shkayach to Zach for coming on to this. That the language of Vayasev Elokim, that we find in the beginning of Parshas Bishalach, so there's a medrash that says that that is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, that we were in a reclined position, Darach Malchus. And that's why we have this din, and the language of the medrash is going back to the language of the Mishnah, that even an Ani has to do Haseba. And in some of this form of the Rishonim, the Orchas Chaim and the Sefer Amanig, they point to that Medrash as a possible source. So does that give us a Chi of Minat Torah? Or does it give us something in between? Or does it at least add another element here? Maybe. And the idea that, in that case, it does seem to be more about the display, more about the kind of Pursuma Nisa or Zecher L'Nes aspect. And in one contemporary sefer in the Chavetzal Sashar and Torah, he suggests that that also connects to that Tosus in the beginning of our parak on the Mishnah that says that the idea that even an Ani who's not going to be comfortable should have to do this, that maybe that is because you have this aspect of Zeichel and Ace together with it. Okay. So the other question that we wanted to put on the table and is going to be more to examine about, but let's just try to get the conversation started. So what about how we understand it? So is it a din in and of itself that either the Torah or Chazal or somewhere in between asked us to do Haseba Pesach night? And even though we know it doesn't apply to everything, or we can assume right now it doesn't apply to everything, but, okay, it has context where it makes sense and context where it doesn't. Or is it a condition in the individual mitzvos? So this question, just to give a little bit of an introduction to it, was posed by the Brisker Rav, by the Griz, in his Sefer on the Rambam, and in other writings as well. And one of his initial applications is, again, as Ari brought up at the very beginning here, the question of, is it ma'akev? Do these mitzvos that bring Haseba into them, if you fail to lean, so does that invalidate the mitzvah? So if you saw, this was a suffix in Tosfos on our new daf now on Kuvches Amud Aleph. Tosfos has a suffix about this, right? If you drink the wine, for example, without Haseba, so is that a flaw in the drink, and does that require us to do it again? So Tosfos was Masupik about this. And the Rush, if you had a chance to see that, the Rush in Simen Chaf, the Rush went in the direction of Chumrah. So to take the position, no pun intended, that this is Ma'akev, would seem to push us to say it's a din in the mitzvah. Because if it's a din in of itself, so then why should I not be able to be Yotze without it? Now, maybe we should draw a distinction between different mitzvos. Right? So if we're talking about Dalet Kosos, so that's Drabanan. And it'll be easier to say, like one of the points you mentioned before, that there's going to be a disconnect if Haseba is Darabanan and whatever mitzvah we're talking about is Daraisa. It's going to be hard for it to be Ma'akev. So if the mitzvah we're talking about is itself Darabanan, and especially if it's linked in a stronger way, so if we're talking maybe about Dalet Kosos specifically, that might have more reason to be tied into the Haseba in an inseparable fashion than, say, Matzah. So we'll have to figure that out, because it could impact, it could come from a lot of directions. Is it Dalet Kosos specific? Is that Drabanan specific? So we have to figure that out, but this possibility that it would be Ma'akev does say something to us. While the Rambam, it doesn't seem like from the Rambam's language that it's Ma'akev. So if that's the case, then for the Rambam specifically, as the Brisker Rav understands, it seems more possible to say that this is a din in of itself. It's not a detail in matzah for sure, maybe not even a detail in Dalet Kosos either. It's a general idea that the Torah or Chazal ask of us that our Seder night experience should be Behaseva. And for some details it makes sense, and for some details it doesn't make sense. But it's not something which goes into the rules of every mitzvah in and of itself. Now, as he notes, what's another indication that this is true? Right, so here I think the halacha ches you have up here also. So the Rambam has a line in halacha ches which does indicate that way also. Right, so look at the very end of Halacha Ches, that's up here on our chat screen. When do we need Haseba? V'shas achilas kizayis matzah, uv'shasiyas arba kosos ha'ilu. Right, so when do I need Haseba? All the Rambam says here is for matzah and dalet kosos. But what's the next line say? V'shar achiloso shtiyoso. What's the story about the rest of your eating that night? No haseb at all? No. So what does he say? Im haseb, hareze meshubach, v'im lav eino tzarech. So if you don't want to, fine, but if you do, hareze meshubach. So why should it be Meshubach? So what it seems to be saying is that it's a floating obligation, or a leaning obligation, but it's an obligation that is a general concept for the Seder, that the Seder should have this aspect of a Seba. It makes most sense with certain aspects, and therefore it's really necessary there. But if you could incorporate it into other parts of the Seder, so then that's also Kedai. So that does seem to support the idea that it's more of a general idea for its own purposes, and it has its own value to it. And the Ramah saw that. The Ramah in Taf Ayin Beis, and Sif Zayin, so the Ramah also writes there, the Lechachila, it's be good to do Haseba for the entire Seder. So that also seems to flow with this Maimonidean idea that it's something which is its own concept and we apply it where and when we can. Now, where and we can is clearly a very important detail because, so the Rambam here just mentioned matzah and dalet kosos. There are other aspects, like we alluded to before. There's probably three categories. There's probably those situations where, those aspects of the Seder where we really must do a Seba. Those where it's maybe voluntary. And maybe those where it really doesn't fit. And that detail we will start our focus with tomorrow. So let's just quickly recap what we spoke about. So we've got a lot on the table here. So we spoke about this obligation of Haseba. And we asked a number of questions. We asked, is it Dereisa Drabanan? It would seem like it's Drabanan. That's how some sources say explicitly. And the fact that it plays out with certain exceptions sounds like it's Drabanan. The tzad to say it's Dereisa, two possible tzadim. One is that the Rambam introduces it right after quoting Psukim, but the Psukim don't actually say Haseba. So at most you'd have to say it's Maser Hakasav L'Chachamim, but Vashel Weiss considers that and rejects it ultimately. But that's a possible angle. Or, as Zach intuited, the idea that the Medrash has, that it connects to a Zecher of what the Pasuk in the beginning of Vishalach says, that indicates that our Haseba was a part of the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience, and that this is a Zecher for that. And that also could explain Tosfos in the beginning of the Parak, that even the Chiddush, the Mishnah is, that even an Ani who can't sit comfortably by Haseba still has to do it anyway. And that connected to another question we want to explore, which probably going to have a lot of implications, is Haseba for our purposes supposed to invoke a certain, supposed to evoke a certain internal feeling? Or is it a display which doesn't really have to correlate to how we feel inside? It's all about the message that we're conveying to others. And we noted the very often referenced change in the text of the Haggadah. The Rambam has, the Haggadah says, Chayev Adam Liros Asatzmo B'chol Devedor, and the Rambam's language is Laharos Asatzmo. So it's a very different direction, how you see yourself or how you display yourself to others. And being that that's where Haseba emanates from, so that's going to be an important thing to figure out. And then we considered also this question of, is it its own concept or is it a detail of all the mitzvos? And we saw that there are at least two major nafkaminas of that, the question of whether it's ma'akev or not, which Tosfos on Ardaf brought up, and the Rush took further, and we'll have to explore that in greater detail, God willing, tomorrow. And also the question of, is this something which has value beyond its obligatory instances? Is it something which, if you could, you should try to get into the Seder as much as possible? So the Rambam does indicate like that, the Ramah does as well, which also seems to give it its own status. And that brings us to the question of what's not spelled out on our daf or in the Rambam as to when Haseba fits and when it doesn't fit. Our Gemara has a lot to say about it, but not everything. So that's also something that we need to explore more. And God willing, that's what we will pick up with tomorrow. Okay, any questions? Everybody with me? Everybody good? Okay, excellent. So I will wish you a safe and healthy day. I look forward, Bez Hashem, to seeing you in person tomorrow. And hopefully we should have a pleasant and uplifting experience. All right. I will see you soon. Have a great day.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you, Kol Tov.